Recently, I was intrigued by a study on two identical twins. As you can see, one was a long-distance runner, and one was a weightlifter, a bodybuilder. And interestingly, they have almost exactly the same sized calves, if not the runner's calves being different, but some pretty profound changes despite being identical twins. So we figured we'd talk about that. And then we'd also talk about identical twins that had significantly different sun exposure. The sun-exposed twin is supposedly 10 years older looking, but I don't know if I 100% agree with that, but she certainly has a lot more sun damage. And then two identical twins, one of them that just had regular Botox treatments, and then one that had almost no Botox treatments for many years. And the one that was treated with Botox, certainly less wrinkles, and also certainly a lot younger looking. So join us as we dive into these identical twin studies. Welcome back to the Gillette Health Podcast, where we give you tools to develop a balanced approach for health. I'm Dr. Kyle Gillette.
And I'm James O'Hara, nurse practitioner. Today we are talking about monozygotic twins, identical twins, and specifically when their health paths diverge, which I think is particularly exciting. When it comes to health, everything and anything is determined by genetics and environment, essentially. So it's very cool when you have the same genetics and different environments and see what the health effects are.
Yeah, as usual, this is not medical advice. It's just tools to give you a balanced approach for health. Not even medical advice for these twins, but it is interesting. The first study is on two twins who got botulinum toxin, also known as Botox. One of them got it four times over the period of 19 years, and the other one got it very regularly over the period of 19 years. And this is a great study to publish because this is actually a common question. Does Botox really help prevent age lines or wrinkles? And we've certainly had many aesthetics podcasts before. We've spoken with Dr. Alec McCarthy, a regenerative medicine PhD. And the short answer is yes, it does. Although around social media, I've been hearing that Botox actually makes wrinkles worse and that it has aged people's faces.
So what powers that be would try to dissuade individuals from using botulinum toxins? There's like, what, five or six different flavors now. Who wouldn't want people to have a cheap, safe, effective way to reduce the development of wrinkles?
The younger generations.
Gen Alpha.
I don't know what Gen Alpha is. That the one?
Up and coming.
Younger than Gen
Z? I think that's
the
newest one. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose so. I would normally say big functional, but functional medicine is actually magically okay with brand name Botox, even though it causes autoantibodies over a period of time in most people. So you're causing an immune reaction. How is functional medicine okay with this?
It treats the root cause. Muscle contraction. The root cause of wrinkles.
It doesn't treat the root cause of muscle contraction, though. It just paralyzes it.
So it's treating a symptom.
Yeah, that's like saying if you have tennis elbow or lateral epicondylitis, you just paralyze the muscle so you
paralyze
can't
paralyze the
it.
Arm.
Your arm is just there.
How's that for some dysfunctional medicine?
Functional medicine is okay with Botox because they make a lot of money from it. You have your functional medicine clinic and you have your med spa on the side. And then you do hormones, and that's your unholy trifecta of dysfunctional medicine because you're not really thinking about the root cause. It's all algorithms. The same hormone profile as you're on yourself, and then the same gut health protocol that everyone else uses that gets you the most full script money, and then cookie cutter Botox. Although maybe we should be a little bit more quiet when we say that because we do hormones and aesthetics. And functional medicine too.
Yeah, but the difference is in the rationale. I think that whenever we start a treatment, all of our patients know and understand the reasoning behind it. They know that it makes sense. It's evidence-based. And actually, this is a fairly evidence-based study. This is probably a bad study for Botox and companies that make botulinum toxins because these are very modest doses, which I think are quite reasonable. Some people do want to be completely frozen, but we tend to do very light, probably what a lot of med spas would call dustings of treatments. But this is about an average of 40 units every 3 to 6 months over a 19-year time period. If we round up to 20, that's about 40 to 80 treatments, depending on how often she got them over that 20-year period. So that's a, if it's 40, that's about a $16,000 investment, about a $32,000 investment if you're, you know, every single 3 months you're in there getting your treatment touched up. But I know that quite frequently there are before and afters on social media and units are dosed much higher than this, but it doesn't look like you actually need those higher doses.
Yeah. And of note with this study, they treated crow's feet very heavily. They did get an excellent cosmetic result, preventing static and dynamic wrinkle formation in that area. But you don't have to treat crow's feet at all. They could have cut the cost almost in half if they had just treated glabellar lines, which is the lines right in between the brow. You have procerus and lateral corrugators, and then frontalis. And as we've mentioned in podcast with plastic surgeon Dr. Carson Williams, which may or may not be out by the time we post this, often, depending on anatomy, you treat glabellar lines much heavier, something like twice as many units as frontalis.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the fact that, speaking of cosmetic surgery, there were no cosmetic surgeries in either one of these, actually no other aesthetic treatments at all, which is quite surprising, sort of a gem of a study since they found these two individuals. But they did use sunscreen, which is probably the best bang for your buck, you know, anti-aging hack or quick fix that's out there.
Yes, or avoiding all the sunlight like you're a vampire.
Yeah, speaking of avoiding sunlight, that does bring us to our next twin study. And I don't know about the perceived age difference here. I don't know that the individual on the right looks to be 11 or 12 years older, like the citation says here. But there is a pretty unmistakable difference there in things like wrinkles and sunspots, you know, skin evenness, all the, those sorts of metrics. And these women were aged 61.
Yeah, quite a few more sunspots. Sunspots, whether it's solar lentigo or non-sunspot age-related spots like seborrheic keratosis, which is the barnacle-like plaque, or even things like angiomas or telangiectasias are often very genetic. These people are identical twins. So that cannot be an excuse of why one has significantly more sunspots. So the UV radiation from the sun certainly damages the skin. It does not mean, so this is completely separate from the effect, the beneficial effect of ambient light, full spectrum light that your eyes see.
Yeah, it's fascinating because there was about a 10 hour per week difference in the sun exposure. So we couldn't find the full study. There wasn't an answer as to how many hours of sun they were getting baseline, but 10 hours more would lead to the result on the right. And what I'd be really interested to see is if there were like snapshots in time. So like age 30, 35, 40, 45, et cetera, because a lot of times you don't see that cumulative damage show up until people get into their years north of 45 or 50. And then it's like all of a sudden they're aging much more rapidly because the DNA damage has sort of caught up with them at that point.
Yeah. I also don't recall sunglass use being mentioned in the study, but it would be interesting to see cataract incidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's another good consideration. So bottom line is use a sunscreen, use a mineral-based if you like. I don't tend to have terrible concerns about the chemical-based sunscreens, but at the end of the day, you will reduce your chances of skin cancer and also skin damage, which oddly, more people are motivated by skin aging than the fear of skin cancer.
Yeah, a good rule of thumb for skin cancer. Melanomas are certainly sun-related, unless it's a subungual melanoma, which is a type of melanoma under a nail. And melanomas are generally related to very severe burns, where there's significant DNA damage, whereas squamous and basal cell carcinomas, which are non-melanocytic or non-pigmented cancers, are related to cumulative sun exposure. So if you're very highly sun exposed and you live old enough, you are pretty likely to get a basal or squamous cell carcinoma. We always have people check the noses and the ears very carefully. The earlier you find those, the less of a huge hunk of cartilage you have to cut out. And again, we did discuss a lot of these with Carson Williams, so we'll try to have his podcast posted shortly after this one if it's not already posted.
Yeah, I think that sounds great. So moving on from skin to the musculoskeletal system and cardiovascular system, a couple of twins here. One sedentary truck driver, the other marathoner triathlete, which is about as opposite as you can get in terms of people being into general fitness.
Yes.
So we've got some body composition and blood markers here. And then we also go into some of their relative body composition and fitness metrics as well. These are 52 years old. And what is striking about their body composition?
First and foremost, their body fat percentages are different, which is not surprising, but striking. The triathlete twin had a body fat percentage of 19% on a DEXA, and the truck driver twin had a body fat percentage of 27%. We also noted that, yes, this is a Dr. Andy Galpin study. This was an older study, more than 5 years ago, when it seemed that he was not publishing open access. Many of his recent studies are published open access. But we'll put the figures or tables up on the screen. In addition, the lipid profiles are significantly different as well.
Yeah. So you know, people saying, you know, well, your lipids, these lipoproteins, they're genetic. You can't really change them a lot. Maybe that's the case with HDL, but the LDL there is significantly different, about a 30% difference in terms of the more active twin having a lower LDL, a little bit higher HDL. But even in the untrained twin, an HDL of 57 as a truck driver, that's pretty impressive. Not that that's protective, but it's much higher than you would tend to expect.
In addition, this trained twin has another thing that we see frequently in marathon runners, jumpers and runners that have a lot of foot striking. It is a A1C that appears elevated despite a normal fasting glucose of 86. In general, when you're thinking about hemoglobin, anything that affects red blood cell turnover can affect hemoglobin A1C.
Yeah, and in this case, I think, you know, if you're doing hours of prolonged exercise, your liver is going to be kicking out a lot of glucose to fuel your muscles during that run, and you're going to have more periods of elevated glucose than your untrained or non-exercising counterpart. So that certainly contributes to the percent of the hemoglobin that ends up glycated. Mm-hmm.
There is also differences in the VO2 max of the two twins. Again, they're aged 52 when the study was published. And the triathlete twin had a VO2 max of 53 to 54. And the truck driver twin had a VO2 max of 41 or 42, which was still in the 60th percentile of age. Pretty impressive with no training.
Yeah, and if I recall correctly, the VO2 max between 53 and 54 is 90th percentile. Somebody in their 50s, still it's pretty really good VO2 max. Some of the triathletes' personal bests were a marathon of 301 at age 27 and then a 315 at age 39. So that's really impressive from a performance maintenance standpoint. Generally, people peak, and then in his case, he remained quite active and was able to maintain a very respectable marathon time up to almost age 40 there.
Yeah. In the next study, we compared another endurance athlete or long distance runner versus his identical twin that was a weightlifter. Seeing this picture is actually what inspired us to look into these twin studies again. And again, there's lots of twin studies on sexuality, twin studies on things like bipolar and schizophrenia and different mental health conditions, including twin studies where the twins grew up in different locations. But in the case of these twins, the difference in muscular development is very striking. I suppose this is expected, but some things like calf development are of particular interest.
Yeah, I don't know. It looks to me like perhaps the weightlifter may have skipped leg day on an occasion or two. Has a relatively developed upper body, but from a leg standpoint, not that much more muscular than his distance running counterpart.
Yeah, the distance runner has pretty shredded calves, so you can see the vascularity in them, and also has a relatively well-developed lower extremity in general. I think you can see maybe even striations on his hamstrings. Pretty impressive given that if you did a DEXA scan on both these individuals, the weightlifter would probably have a lower body fat percentage.
Yeah, I would think so.
The next study is a study on identical twins as well, and it compares the difference in MET index over time.
Yeah, so we have sort of a chart linked here, and you know the difference was between, we'll call it between 4 and 5 MET hours per day in terms of activity. We've linked a chart, and this would be something like you ride your bike at 9 miles per hour, 1 hour per day more than the sedentary counterpart. So it's not that they were completely sedentary. We don't really know exactly what their day-to-days look like. Some of them did have more active jobs. Like I think there were more farmers in the sedentary group, which is a relatively active job. But the difference in leisure activity is what was really being measured here. And I guess the inspiration for putting this study in is that people will give too much weight to genetics and health problems and say, oh, well, you know, there's nothing you can do about it. It's genetic. And even a small difference in leisure time activity, for instance, the 7.5 MET hours per week, so that'd be about 1 MET hour per day. That's what the 150-minute moderate intensity American Heart Association activity guideline is. So we're talking about very small amounts of activity here. And then we have the sort of subsequent health outcomes as it relates to chronic disease, blood pressure, diabetes, arthritis, which is interesting because this is perhaps to dissuade the naysayers who are like, oh, you can't
don't exercise,
can't run. It's bad for your knees.
You're going to grind that down.
Bad for your hips.
Too much pounding.
You'll get sciatica.
Yeah. If you're a 230-pound runner hybrid athlete, then you're doomed to have double knee replacements by the time you're 40. I suppose I haven't got to 40 yet.
Yeah. Well, I consider myself a bit of a hybrid athlete. I'm more like a Prius, though. I'm not like a hybrid supercar.
Yeah. I'm more like an Escalade. I would say a Cybertruck, although there's way too many memes about that. So yeah. We'll leave that behind. The difference in diabetes between active and inactive is very striking. So for type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetes, more or less metabolic syndrome looped into one group, you have 4% in the active group and 14% in the inactive group. So yes, there is some individuals with metabolic syndrome that are active, but there is a huge difference. The odds ratio here is 0.09 with a 95% confidence interval. Again, only 100 sample size in this study, 100 or 200 between the both groups. The 95% confidence interval ends at 0.7, which means it is statistically significant even with a relatively small study size.
Yeah, and the confidence interval is wide. You know, it looks like it could be as good as a 99% reduction in the risk for diabetes or as bad as only a 30% relative risk reduction. Either one of those is tremendous. Very powerful health effect, but it is a bit wide on the confidence interval. So I don't think it's quite a 91% reduction, but it just goes to show that being active, even a small amount, seems to be one of the more powerful things you can do to prevent diabetes.
And it could also be reasonable to say that it is as likely better than 91% as it is likely worse than 91%.
Absolutely.
So it's very unlikely 91%, but it could be it's equally likely worse or better. Yeah. And this is why companies hire statisticians before they enroll the study, because they have a good idea of the expected outcome. And they will choose the size of the study and the size of the experimental and or control group in order to have the expected statistically significant and or non-inferiority outcome that they want.
So,
which is why when people interpret these studies, physicians, you know, clinicians, any clinician or scientist, they should be looking to see if someone did do that, because companies almost always do.
Yeah, you can look at it. And if you are familiar with, like, oh, I manage diabetes, manage blood pressure, manage arthritis, et cetera, do these things sort of pass the smell test? Do these make sense? Is this going to alter the way that I practice, et cetera, et cetera? Like, this really lines up well with the reduced risk of the diabetes. What is kind of surprising here is how little of an apparent effect there is on blood pressure, active versus inactive individuals.
Yeah, and that's why in individuals that do have hypertension, exercise further increasing that hypertension transiently for long periods of time can be concerning. But the most concerning thing about the active group, this is sarcasm and joking coming for those that can't tell, is that it increased the incidence of rheumatoid arthritis by 400%. So we should title this video, Exercise Quadruples Your Risk of Rheumatoid Arthritis.
Yeah. Or maybe exercise creates a care-seeking pattern in those active individuals where they're like, man, my joints are hurting and it's getting in the way of my active lifestyle. And then therefore they're more likely to be diagnosed. Again, we can speculate on this all day, but I think that it's just a sort of artifact or coincidence. I mean, look at that confidence interval. I think that's the widest one of the whole study, is the one on rheumatoid arthritis. 0.45 to 35.79.
Yeah, the statistics don't line up in that case. Come to think of it, did they exclude CrossFitters from this study? Because we know that that sport is just far too dangerous in order to do.
When was this study published? I don't even know if CrossFit was invented at that time. It is an older study, I believe.
CrossFit not invented. How did people stay healthy?
Let's see. I can actually check really quick. This was published
1975?
In 1975?
No, that's 2010.
But these individuals were
looking to 1975.
Yeah, 1975 was sort of the baseline assessment.
Wow.
So I don't think CrossFit was around back then.
I don't think so. Pretty interesting study. The last study that we thought about is the Trend Twins, although apparently they do all the exact same things, so not much to study with them.
Yeah, if you had one twin that was living the Trend Twin lifestyle and another one that had a balanced approach to health, still lifted weights, still ate a lot of protein, still worked out.
Just a little trend replacement therapy.
Without any trend replacement therapy, it'd be interesting to see how that cocktail of anabolics is affecting the system, the physiology, you know, looking at the heart, looking at brain function, cognitive function. That would sort of be a plethora of knowledge we could draw from. But they do the exact same thing. So you do have some twins that will have very similar lifestyle, very similar health risks, because the behaviors a lot of times do seem to be heritable. Mm-hmm.
Lots of similarity in the types of injuries that siblings and twins get, and really any primary relative.
Yeah. And part of this, I think, is tied to anatomy. We were chatting earlier about two female identical twins that had each sustained the exact same knee injury falling downstairs several months apart around the same age. It does seem like some people are more prone mechanically to certain types of injuries, and that's sort of borne out in a number of these identical twin studies, or just even fraternal twin studies.
I think that covers it for the twin studies we found. Please let us know if you have found any twin studies that we should cover, or let us know with nice comments or mean comments about the validity or invalidity, I suppose, of our analysis.
And if you are a twin, please enroll somewhere and let people study you.
Yeah, I think that about covers it for today. As always, again, please comment below, but thank you for your time. And may God bless you with health and happiness.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.